This is
Make It Kind.
M.I.P.
with Masamela Matfumo.
Mark Thompson.
Make It Kind.
Get woke.
Have you ever wanted to learn a new language? Maybe you were inspired by a recent international trip, became obsessed with a foreign film or TV show, wanted to communicate better with a loved one, or just felt like developing a new skill. With Rosetta Stone, learning a new language is easier than you thought. Rosetta Stone has been a trusted expert for 30 years with millions of users and 25 languages offered, including Spanish, French, Japanese, Dutch, and more. Learning is immersive and designed for long-term retention, so you fully learn to speak, listen, and even think in that language. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sail good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Thursday, again, folks, and once again, we're happy to have with us for our weekly Thursday Coast segment, Marcos Melitzis, the founder of Daily Coast, the largest online progressive community in civics with a Q. And obviously, we all are still analyzing and overanalyzing and commiserating and trying to figure out what the hell happened. And we still don't know everything as numbers are still coming in. But we'll see what more we know than we did 2 weeks ago. And as the weeks go by, we'll know even more. And there's some fundamental questions we'll seek to answer. Meanwhile, is anyone at all surprised by what we've seen in terms of, and beginning first and foremost with some of these appointments to the cabinet, Trump's cabinet? So let's get into it, Marcos, once again, as we will this week before Thanksgiving, or as I often like to call it in solidarity with our indigenous people, Thanksgiving. Marcos, how are you, buddy?
Doing good, all things considered. And I just want to sort of note that I was very confident going into the election, and I was wrong. So it's just a quick reminder that I'm a fallible human being and don't always get it right.
Well, but I think the difference, though, is we all thought that. I mean, there was not a soul who didn't. In fact, I was reminded that, you know, Alan Lichtman has never been wrong. The keys to the White House, he's never been wrong. Both Michael Moore and James Carville agreed with us. Mm-hmm. And remember now, Moore even said Trump was going to win in 2016. So that's the other thing that makes it even more difficult for me. It's rare that everybody's wrong on the same subject. So this is what makes it doubly unusual. But let me start here. Because, you know, I've seen a lot of numbers and people still crunching numbers. I'm a couple fundamental ones. One, is it, from your analysis, is it accurate that our side overall, that is the Democratic coalition that elected Biden, just did not turn out as much as it did in 2020? Does it somewhat boil down to that itself?
So again, the numbers are still pretty early, and people are still digging into them, and they haven't been certified in a lot of places. So votes are still literally being counted in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So what it looks like is overall there was slippage from Joe Biden's numbers, but not a lot, and most of it was national, not in the battleground states. So field operation clearly still matters. Donald Trump moved the nation 6 points in his direction. So it was an R6, and Biden won it by 3 Trump won it by nationally by 1.5. So, you know, closer to 4.5 points when it's all said and done. It used to be 6. Now we're looking like 4.5 points, maybe 4 when it's all the final votes are counted. California's still counting. It was just enough. And the shift was only about 1.5 to 2 points in the battleground states. So we were saying beforehand, I was saying that the conventional wisdom is that a field operation's worth 1 to 3 points. It did exactly that. So everybody who did all the GOTV and did all that hard work, it made a huge difference. The problem was that the whole nation shifted, you know, 4 to 6 points to the right, and that's hard to overcome. The most of that slippage, though, was not in battleground states. So that's why Trump ends up winning the popular vote while still winning the battleground states by about the same margin that he did in 2016. So it looks like preliminarily that Harris got the votes that Biden did in the battleground states. Trump just got more. So there was still more blood to squeeze from the stone. And before the election, that was one of my arguments. It's like, he's had 2 elections already where he's squeezed out everything. Like, is there really that much more to squeeze out? Turns out there was. There were still people who had never voted in those previous elections who turned out for Trump this time, apparently motivated by gas of groceries, price of groceries. Like, that was a factor that really turned people out that hand before. And we're now in this weird world where high turnout actually helps Republicans in a way that it used to help Democrats, because high turnout means that lower propensity voters, which are usually lower on the socioeconomic ladder, so poor, less connected people, more marginalized people, and now they are Trump voters. So out of the 30 poorest states, Trump won 28 of them. Of the 20 richest states, Harris won 17 of them. And there is a complete inversion of what used to be, Republicans used to be the party of the wealthy and the elite, and now it's actually flipped, and Democrats are now the party of the wealthy and educated and elite.
Yeah, yeah. And so hence the quote-unquote elite that were in her pocket were obviously those who were aware. Just before we went on the air, folks, Marcus and I were talking about, and I know this for a fact. There were people on election day calling election centers, and this is from some of our election protection friends, trying to get information on where to vote, what, and calling to say they didn't see Biden on the ballot. Is Biden still on the ballot? Mm-hmm. And obviously, with the demographic you just named, what comes with that demographic is probably more of a focus on what's happening currently politically, and more of a focus on mainstream news, whereas others are just trying to make ends meet every day. Folks don't watch the news every day. Folks are watching Netflix. And I'm not knocking nobody for doing that. Nope. But that's where we are. And if folk don't even know about that, there were people living in nursing homes calling to ask how they could vote 24 hours out. This is anecdotal evidence that, you know, I was made aware of, and people were shocked.
The number one Google search phrase on election day, it was, is Biden still on the ballot? That was, yeah, the number one Google search. There's this shift. So one of the things, you know, I was at an event of people, you know, trying to figure out what happened, and somebody made a really good point, and they said that Democrats are like that really annoying spouse where you come home and you just want to vent, right? Like, oh, my boss is such a pain in the ass, and he asked me to do this, and my coworkers are like on my case, and then they were out of my favorite soup at the deli, and they just want to vent, right? And then you got the annoying spouse, and I used to be this person too. Was like, well, did you try this? Did you say that? Why didn't you talk about this? And did you bring this up to them, right? And you're trying to solve the problem when sometimes people realize that the problems are big, and they just want to vent. They just want to get it off their chest. And learning how to listen and just validate those feelings was critical for me in my relationship with my teenage daughter. Because, you know, you ain't going to solve no teenage girl's problems because they're pretty, you know, they're not the world's most pressing issues. And they're, you know, they're kind of these personality conflicts. And sometimes for me, you know, when I learned to be like, yeah, that sucks. And like actually mean it, like sort of like tap into her pain with whatever, you know, fights she's having and be like, oh, that's awful. So sorry. And leave it at that. They feel seen. And my relationship with my daughter like improved by 1,000,000%. And that's what Trump did. Trump's like, yeah, everything sucks. That's all people wanted to hear. And they don't want solutions. Most people know, right? That's why when you're like, you talk about Trump's solutions and you're like, you know, like mass deportations, that will raise prices. And you know that tariffs are going to triple, you know, they're going to raise prices by 30%. And you know, like, that's what we're saying. Right. They're just being like, ah, God, it sucks that grocery prices are so high. And we're like, well, you know, grocery prices in Germany are a lot higher than they are here. Like, they don't want to hear that. And they just want to be somebody to be like, yeah, that's awful. And to mean it, like really sort of attuned to that pain. Because, yeah, once you get to the solutions, like obviously Trump had no solutions, but they didn't care. Trump at least made them feel seen. And I suspect that that's something Democrats are going to have to get better at, or we're going to have to find the Democrats are good at just seeing that pain and just validating it and saying, yeah, it's real. And we'll do our best to make that better. But yeah, it sucks that you have to deal with that. And so Trump did that. And that's why, you know, we're going to be doing lots of Schadenfreude over the next couple of years, where all these groups that voted for Trump are going to be shocked that he's going to make those problems worse. Because clearly, those of us who know what's going on, we know that he didn't offer any solutions. But there's a certain subset of people that it didn't matter for them at that moment. And that's something that we need to come to terms with as a movement, as a people. It's just to learn how to listen in a way that doesn't try to solve people's problems, just to validate them and be like, yeah, no, it sucks that eggs now cost double what they used to do. And it's hard for us because we are the party of the educated now. Like, we do have solutions. We even may have... Oh, so here's a perfect example, right? We have time, right? I got an example that came up in this meeting. Yeah, so talking to somebody who runs an organization that tries to organize rural voters. And rural voters, they're like 86% Trump now. Like, it is out of control. And he talks about how the child tax credit really helped these people. The child tax credit gave money to parents, literally gave them cash. And we lost the child tax credit because when it came up for reauthorization, Joe Manchin wanted a work requirement on it. And then Democrats said, hell no. And then it all blew up. We didn't have the votes, right? And so we're like, oh man, Joe Manchin. Mark, can you believe it that this group did polling in rural areas? And it turns out that rural people who benefited from this program wanted the work requirement because then it didn't feel like they were a charity case. It made them feel like they actually were earning the child tax credit. So we actually, in our sort of wisdom, because it's better policy, it's no work requirement. So we're looking, it's better policy. It wasn't better politics. Like, we were losing on the politics by saying that they didn't have to work. And I'm pretty sure, like, that's not my group of people, but I'm sure they see, like, their, you know, neighbors and stuff taking advantage of the programs. And they probably get pissed off at that, right? Because out of just fairness. So we actually lost on the politics of the child tax credit by demanding that there not be a work requirement. We thought we were helping people. They were resentful at us for that. So there needs to be a better connection between policy and politics And we need to just be better. And another example on the politics of it is like 80% of CHIPS money, that is the bill to bring semiconductor manufacturing back to the United States. That 80% of that money went to red states and red districts, and most of them in rural areas. Why, Mark? So Biden's theory of the case is that you economically develop these areas, they will reward Democrats, right? Because they're the ones that brought the money in. Instead, they voted 86% for Trump. Why didn't we build those chips on the south side of Chicago? Why didn't we build that in Philly? Why don't we build it in areas with heavy Black and Latino populations and show them that we were delivering for them instead of trying to chase after these white rural voters that are trapped in Fox News land? And if they want to start voting Democratic, then yeah, they get some of the goodies, right? But there is a disconnect between policy and politics, and it really behooves Democrats to be better both at listening to what people want. So even if it's not the best policy, if people really want a work requirement, then fine, give them the work requirement. It would have passed. We would have kept that piece of legislation going if there had been a work requirement. And also reward your own voters, because they just assumed that Black and brown voters were going to stick with the Democratic Party, and we're seeing slippage. And with Latino voters, we saw big slippage because they don't feel connected to the political process. They don't feel like they're being rewarded for their vote. So yeah, so they went and flirted with Donald Trump, and it cost us big time. So yeah, I just think we need to be smart about the politics of what we do and stop being idealistic and paternalistic as well, and just telling people what is best for them. Nobody likes to be told what is best for them. Well, even if we know better.
But I think part of it is too, I don't know that anybody was told, see, because Democrats also aren't good at tooting their own horn, informing people, you know, if gas went down, if price at the grocery store did actually go down, maybe not enough, there was no apparatus for Democrats or the Biden administration to make the argument that that's what they did, okay? I mean, that was just not, and we talked about that ad nauseum over the years. That's why a week before the election, the Treasury Secretary called me and asked to do a live like this for me to talk about some of the accomplishments they'd made for the economy 1 week out. And he's hatched, so we couldn't talk about it in the context of Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a cabinet member, mm-hmm. right? So Deputy Treasury Secretary. So and I think even he had to admit, even by his presence, we're not good at getting this out there. Mm-hmm. So that, I agree with what you're saying, but there's also the fundamental reality. There were basic good things that the Biden administration did.
Absolutely.
Jobs, but did not get it out there. Historically problematic in doing that. There's that point. But I want to go back to what you're saying about where.
And Mark, you know, people, you know, I saw people talking about they got Trump checks. They never got Biden checks, right? Because Trump signed the signature on his economic recovery checks, and Biden, for whatever reason, I still don't understand to this very day what the frick they were thinking. They put the Treasury Secretary's name when he sent out checks, right? So it's very poor, like you say, they're terrible at branding their accomplishments. So yeah, for sure.
Here's no DeMarcus. I'll be honest with you. I think if Biden had done that, I think he, you know, again, they want to take they go low, we go high, which obviously didn't all work. But let's be honest, man. Because we cannot negate the just like the right wing took over the talk radio airwaves for a generation, they've also taken over the social media propaganda machine with the help of Elon Musk and probably a foreign actor. And in doing so if Biden sends out a check with his name on it, what would it have said? What would people have said? Oh. The narrative would have been he's copping off of Trump, you know, and then we wouldn't have had an answer to that. See, every move, even on that score,
that's a good answer. So you're like, yeah, he is. Trump did a good thing there, and we're doing a good thing too.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know. Our answers are often too late, and then we don't have the answer to the answer in the way that they do. to push it out on the media, on the social media, to really influence people's opinion. They started a while ago with the STEMI and the check. That's been going on since before this election cycle. But I want to go back to something you said about the about Latinos. Now, some of these numbers have been adjusted, whether this is accurate or not. There are some who are now saying that the shift in Latinos was not as big as we thought on election night. Have you seen anything like that?
I'm seeing big shifts with Latinos. So I know people are trying to draw different data to try to mask that. I don't think it does us any good to sort of hide that reality. There was a big shift with Latino men. There was. Is it as big as the exit polls say? I don't know. And actually, I don't care. The fact is we have a issue with young men and we do not need to be sticking our heads in the sand. And it's actually multiracial. Like it's just young men are feeling alienated for any number of reasons. And it's not just an American deal. It's something we're seeing globally. Like as women become more educated, as they become more assertive in leadership and in business, men are struggling to cope with the fact that they're no longer the masters of the universe. And I just said it in a way that's kind of demeaning. We need to be better about, again, being attuned to that whatever that trauma is and having an answer for it, because making fun of them is really just going to drive them more into the hands of not just the right, but the fascist right. That's what we're seeing globally. And it's dangerous to see this radicalized male population. And this idea that young people are going to save us, it's driven by young men. Like they are, it's rough. And they're going to school less. They're less educated. Their economic power has diminished dramatically. And it's a struggle for them. Hey, Mark, can I break news on right now?
Please.
Matt Gaetz has just withdrawn for AG.
Oh, wow. Wow, that is big.
So, yeah. I was like, wait, what? they must have been brutal, because I know he was doing a tour with Republican senators with J.D. Vance, trying to get support. So it must have been bleak.
Yeah. Well, obviously. Well, that says a lot, because if so, I wonder now, because he no longer has his congressional seat, he can't go back, I don't think.
Nope.
I don't think he can withdraw his resignation.
No, could he withdraw his resignation? No, because then they would release the report.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Right. So yeah. There's no incentive for him to go back. There was a rumor. I don't know if I really believe it, but it's interesting to share that Trump and Johnson and some folk kind of got together. They won. It was unanimity around Matt being the need to get rid of him. So there was like a conversation. Well, listen, make him think you're going to appoint him as AG, so then he'll resign, and we won't have to release the report, and then decide you're not going to appoint him for AG. So I don't know if that's true, but the result is the same. He's done as well he should be. And there's probably some fear that report is going to come out. It must be that bad. And then you got the defense secretary, a nominee. See,
it's that police report was just either leaked or released. And it does not make him look good in the least bit. It looks like he drugged a woman at a conference after sexually harassing multiple other women, and then drugged her and then raped her while she was drugged. So
Have you or someone you know left the behavioral health field? Coming back has its benefits for you and Ohioans in need. We would love to have you back working at a community behavioral health center, and you could earn up to a $3,000 bonus. That's right, a $3,000 bonus. Visit mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback and restart your journey today. That's mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback.
It's simple math. Tim Horton's 2-3-4 menu fills your mornings without emptying your pockets. $2 gets you a hot coffee or a classic bagel. $3, try a sausage and cheese English muffin or two classic donuts. And for $4, enjoy an egg and cheese croissant or an iced cap. Do the math. It all adds up to delicious deals. Only at Tim's. The Tim's 2-3-4 menu is available until 2 p.m. at select Columbus, Ohio restaurants. Terms apply.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies' slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
So, and gentlemen, I'm a man, Marco's man. We're talking to men right now. A couple of men in the chat, who are asserting their manhood and some asserting the very sexism you talked about. If you're watching on YouTube, I'm not going to share those comments, but, Trump obviously represents maximum maleness. I don't give a damn. And especially with young men, because as young men, what do? We want immunity. We want to do whatever we feel like doing. And then we want it to be forgotten about. That's just our nature. And so I'm sorry, these cats with these sexual crimes, whether it be harassment, and we look at the Supreme Court justices, we look at beginning with Clarence Thomas. And all that, unfortunately, some of us are raised differently, but a lot of men do that, all right, and can relate to it. And yeah, I don't want this guy to be persecuted, because if he's persecuted, I'm persecuted, because I did the same thing, and I didn't mean anything. I just liked the woman or whatever, you know, and so that is a larger problem that actually coincides with my current, as you all know, matriculation in seminary. You don't realize what you said. Masters of the Universe. That is a part of evangelical, if we're on the spectrum from white evangelical Christianity to white Christian nationalism. I, as a white man, speaking as if I am the representative of God on earth. And in other faiths, you know, you have to compensate for that in other cultures, though. Well, why don't we see the presence of God in other people of color or in women or anybody else? But that is a real thing. And I knew that. But man, being here in school, reading, you know, the scholarly evidence of that actual thought going back to as recently, goes back further, but I'm going to say even as recently as Germany and Hitler. Thing, man. I mean, I know you and I know that. But I'm sitting here, man, and these scholars, I'm like, it just takes on a whole nother heavy,
right. Know,
man. And I'm like, wow, you know, again, things we take for granted that are, there's really documented scholarship that is the belief, even down to capitalism and the stock market and the aggression that goes there. I am the male. And I have the right to be as reckless with the house market derivatives as I want to be, because I am the man. And the reality is, you articulate, it's almost as if you were in class with me, the threat of women and their aspirations and their ascendancy feeds the incel culture. Because women, I mean, let's face it, let's just, this is a meal talk. Let's be real, y'all. And I'm not saying this to enable anybody's incel behavior, but women do need us less in terms. Mm-hmm. At one time, women, you know, you had to count on us for income. Now, and studies have shown, probably shouldn't say this too loud even, that over half the households in this country are headed by women, financially and otherwise. And so there's nothing that makes a man, you know, I know people in relationships right now, as I'm sure you do. Some dudes can't be in a relationship with a woman who is more financially or career-wise successful than he is.
Yeah.
Messes them up. And I know folk, you know, couples that I even counsel cannot deal. The dude cannot deal. You know, you and I ain't like that. You know, we like women. Hey, woman want to be with you and me who's rich? Marcos, I don't think we going to fight. So yeah, go on, girl.
Ooh, hell no, please. More money, good.
And even in a career station, I mean, you know, you and I, we've done a lot. We don't have anything else proved. Yeah. So if there's a woman in our lives who is more successful, I could be the first gentleman. Have a ball. Okay.
Oh, hell yeah.
You wouldn't either. We wouldn't trip off of that.
Yeah.
But man, this is a deep cultural thing. And I've had to accept that, you know, Trump either knows that. I don't know whether he's doing it as unwittingly as he is, as unwittingly as he is an unwitting foreign agent. Either he knows it or he doesn't, but he feeds into, you know, and then men aren't finding women. Women aren't finding some of these guys very interesting anymore with their aggression. Women are moving on, you know, and they're climbing up the ladders that they need to climb. God bless them. And these dudes can't deal with it.
And, you know, this is some incredible stuff. I'm going to send you the study after the show just so you can see this. But there is research that shows that as a profession becomes more women come into a profession, men devalue it. And there's a tipping point number, which is around 60%. Once a profession becomes around 60% female, men like will not even go to class in a room full of women. So there are very few male veterinarians right now. It used to be very male dominated, right? It was a type of medicine. And then women went into veterinary sciences, and now suddenly there are almost no male veterinarians. If you look at old British novels, the teacher was always male, right? Like he was guiding the future of our country, right? Soon as women became teaching became predominantly female, it was devalued. And it's a 60% number. You're seeing it in architecture. You're seeing it in all these fields. It's actually quite fascinating. And now what we're getting to is a point where college itself is more and more female. And the more women are going to college, the less men do. Like they cannot handle being surrounded by women striving for the same thing they are striving for. It's a very bizarre dynamic, and it's a very dangerous one because we've seen, obviously, there's also direct correlation between levels of education and partisan affiliation. So you're going to see men becoming more and more Republican because they're less educated. And you see it in, you know, my partner once made an observation that has held up very strongly is that when you hear a Democrat talk about politics, they always say, like, I read about that. When you hear a Republican talking about it, they always say, I heard this, I heard that. And you see it in data that just came out at this election where the more somebody reads, the more likely they're to be Democrats. So if somebody was a newspaper reader, right, they're like 75% Harris supporters. And it came down. And once you get to social media was like 56% Republican. Still pretty Republican, but not like crazy. People who did not read anything were about 70% Trump. So as women become more successful and they strive for educational and economic attainment, men are tapping out and becoming more detached. And the more detached they become, the more Republican they become and radicalized. I mean, part of it is, yeah, it sucks that they're Republican. It sucks even more when they're murdering women because of their incel lunacy or they're advocating for outright fascist politics, which they're doing here in the U.S., but they're doing so in places like Germany and Poland and Eastern Europe, where there are the rise of right-wing fascist governments are becoming more and more a possibility. So this is a global issue that we're dealing with, and it's the same issue. So in Poland, I was reading a story because I read that Polish farmers were being radicalized because in the past, a Polish farmer would have a good Polish girl that lived in the village that would marry them and cook for them and do everything for them.
Yeah.
Now those Polish women are going to the cities, to the universities, getting educated, becoming lawyers and other kind of professionals. And these men are still out in the fields and there's nobody to marry and cook for them. And so that radicalizes them. So this is a global issue.
Yeah.
And right. Putin actually feeds that, right? That's why this like fascist right loves Putin so much, right? Because Russia is all about like, ooh, manly men and no gay people and we hate trans people and all the things that they think is signs of masculinity. And like he feeds that, Viktor Orban as well in Hungary, right? Who's Trump's best friend on the global stage. So all of this is sort of connected so as women become more successful, men are they don't even want to compete with that. They don't want the extra stress and they just tap out. And it just blows my mind, this idea that it's 60% a white person, not white, a male walks into a classroom and if it's 2/3 women, they'll walk out.
No, please share that with me. You know, I don't really want to amplify some of this, but I don't want to point something out to people again, as I talked about before, social media. Marcos and I have been doing this for years, and we've not always done it live. Probably in the last year, I've been doing this as a live broadcast on YouTube. So for the first time today, we are flooded with comments on YouTube supporting some of the things I've been saying about the contempt for women. Mm. All right. And today, and we talk about stuff all the time that's in disagreement with Republicans and Trump, but today the hostility in the comments toward women is off the chain. All right. So nobody's even denying what I'm saying. Women have, comments like women have a place, a certain place. Women are becoming too masculine. There's a lot of people saying that. Incels are not a terrorist organization. Well, beauty's in the eye of the beholder. It's just really amazing that this validates. If y'all on YouTube, I'm not going to post the comments on the screen, but if you're on YouTube, you can see this for yourself. So there's that. But Marcos, in spite of all we said, though, we've also learned in the exit polls as the numbers are being counted, I think you pointed this out to me, that Kamala Harris's portion of white voters went up, didn't it? As more votes are being counted, correct?
Yeah, more white women, and if not holding steady, slightly increasing with white men. So there has been a shift with college education. I mean, I don't think I've seen granular data yet, but I'm going to assume that any gains that Harris had with white men were college educated suburban white men. That's the only place there's been hints of that in any kind of polling and data. So there is a continuous sort of realignment amongst education that it's now starting to reach into white men. And the other thing that makes things a little complicated, Mark, which is why it's not a very simplistic analysis, is that Trump is sort of a uniquely different historical and political figure because he swept the battleground states, but Republicans down ballot only won one of those down ballot states, and that was in Pennsylvania, and did so by a sliver of a sliver. So it's not a Republican Party thing. It's a Donald Trump is a unique historical figure thing. So it's hard to make sweeping generalizations about a realignment when Republicans did so poorly down ballot. And they got crushed down ballot in North Carolina, right? Trump wins North Carolina. We thought we lost the Supreme Court race there. Nope, we won it. We won it by 450 votes. Like it's kind of, but turns out that we held that, like the one race that we were kind of bummed about, we held and we actually gained in the state legislature in North Carolina. So you see this in all the states, right? Democrats survive, Senate Democrats survive in Arizona, Nevada, Wisconsin, Michigan, only Pennsylvania was the only one that we lost while Trump won all those states. So it's hard to talk about a full realignment when Democrats they held their own. I don't know if they did well, but they held their own down ballot. It was pretty much a draw. And we actually gained seats in the House. We gained at least two seats. Maybe when the votes are counted, we may be up plus four in the House. So is that a realignment? And the only reason that we didn't take back the House is because North Carolina redistricted in the middle, earlier this year, and they gerrymandered the map. That's literally the only reason they're going to have control of the House this time around, because of a mid-decade gerrymander. So that's why I don't want to get too deep into it, because once Trump is off out of the ballot, things are going to look different. And so everybody's sort of focused on what did the Latino vote do with Trump, and what did the Black vote do with Trump. It may be more informative to see what happened with those voting groups looking down the ballot. We know that there's a big drop off. So if somebody votes for Trump and doesn't vote for anybody else on the ballot, Trump's not going to be on any ballot ever again. So do we count those people? I don't know. It's complicated and it's difficult to do an analysis. So that's why it's hard to get too deep into this sort of, digging into it, because you're going to see a big snapback towards the Democrats in 2 years. It's virtually inevitable. And then in 4 years, you're going to have Republicans now having to defend Trump's record. It's going to be tough because he's not going to lower prices. So it's going to be his whole, the Democratic campaign is going to be, your prices are too high, and Republicans promised to fix it and they didn't. And so we'll be able to run the same campaign they ran against us in 4 years. So it's going to be an advantage for Democrats. Right now we're in an anomalous point in history, and I'm really struggling to figure out how to make sense of it.
Yeah. But again, I think it goes back to the gender piece, because now the question becomes, can the Democrats nominate a woman again? I mean, is that even a possibility?
Yeah, I hate that. It's a great question, and I hate it. And I hate that people are going to debate it, because I absolutely, that's a very small sample size. It's two female candidates, and both of them lost by slivers. I mean, this was no landslide. Either one of them was not a landslide. And Hillary Clinton won the popular vote. So the notion that we have to nominate a man, unless, I don't get the sense. I no doubt that sexism played a role. But I think the overlap between sexism and Republican incelism is probably one-to-one. I don't know how many in a significant number. People would just find other reasons to vote against, had we nominated Pete, right? Oh, he's gay. Had we nominated Cory Booker? Oh, he's Black. Had we nominated, do we even have a straight white man that, I don't know, Josh Shapiro? He's not Josh Shapiro. The Pennsylvania Shapiro. He's Jewish, right? There would have been something that people want to hate on, John Kerry, he's too effeminate, right? There's always something that look with some BS, so I hope that doesn't scare us away from nominating women, if that is who happens to be the choice of the voters, right? Because we're going to have, it's going to be a crowded primary field. There's going to be like 30 candidates running on a Democratic side. We have a very deep bench right now. So, I mean, it's going to be, is it going to be California Governor Gavin Newsom? Well, he's from California. That disqualifies.
Right.
Like, it's always going to be, there's always going to be something. We can't get caught up in that. We just have to nominate who we think is the best person to represent our party. But I do think what I am seeing is there's going to be a lot more focus with Democratic Party and its partisans and groups towards winning, as opposed to, oh, we got to answer questions about whether trans prisoners should have taxpayer-supported gender-affirming surgery, right? Like, that's not a thing that affects most people, and we do need to refocus. And that wasn't like Harris. She didn't bring that up, right? But
right.
ACLU asked it. Why did the ACLU ask that question? Like, what does that matter in the context of what really matters to people?
Yeah.
And so I think we need to get away from this notion that everybody has to feel like their one pet issue is addressed. If that one pet issue affects just a fraction of people, and you actually hurt our ability to win broadly. Because there's just no doubt that had Harris won, trans people would be better off than they will be under Donald Trump. So did you really need to get her on the record on a policy that existed under Trump, right? Like, who gives a crap? It's there already. Why do you need to opine on that?
Yeah.
So this is sort of a challenge I think we have as a movement, is to get away from wanting to make every single group feel seen and heard about every one of their little issues, and just realize, like, we need to win. And you know what? If we win, you will be better off. And, you know, like with the Gaza people, right? Like, you're not better off with Donald Trump. Congratulations. You feel like you hurt Kamala Harris. You taught her a lesson. What's that mean? People are going to die. More people are going to die now because of what you did.
Right. And people are going to learn the hard way. They're going to see that.
Yeah.
It's inevitable.
And they'll still blame Democrats. Well, she should have run a different campaign. She should have done this. She ran the campaign she did. You had a decision to make.
Right. And still, in many ways, did the unprecedented in 107 days.
Yeah.
I mean, they're going to be books written about that. And at some point, you know, when we, and another time we'll talk, we'll get into, you know, some of our own internal problems and issues, because it didn't help the feud between her camp and the Biden camp. And
some of
the Biden people were still angry.
Yeah.
That he dropped out. But let me ask you this, and I want to do two other things before we go, bit important. If he had stayed in, would it have made a difference?
I think he would have lost by more.
Yeah.
But it would not have been a big, big difference. People were locked in. But you know what? One lesson that I want everybody to take to this, people are like, well, voters say they want a younger candidate. Voters say stuff, they're lying. Like, a lot of that stuff is absolute lies. We gave him a younger candidate, and it didn't barely change numbers, right?
Yeah.
It moved the numbers 3 points. And I'm not convinced that Biden would not have closed that gap, just out of fear of Donald Trump. Because all that excitement that we saw for Harris didn't matter. All the people sleeping for Donald Trump didn't matter. People were locked in. And once people were locked in, nothing was going to change the dynamics of the race. There's nothing, Mark. I look at this race. Could Harris have done something different to change the outcome? I can't find that one thing. And usually in every election, there's like, oh, if they'd done this, if they'd done that, this was like that, like the Comey letter that really kind of screwed Hillary Clinton. And I'm looking at civics data, right, where we can see that day by day, it was a horizontal, line the entire time that she was in a race. Nobody budged. Billions of dollars were spent. Nobody budged.
Yeah. And in that dimension, figuring out what anybody could have done in 107 days was, an impossibility. We'd be remiss if we did not get your thoughts, because you and folks, Daily Coast, more than any of the corporate media, has been doing the most extensive coverage on Ukraine, and we invite you to check that out at dailycoast.com. Your thoughts on the status of that war, the Biden administration lifting the prohibition on Ukraine firing missiles into Russian territory. Russia apparently in the past 24 hours fired an ICBM in the Ukrainian territory. What are you thinking about all of this and where this is going?
Yeah, Ukraine right now is sort of a bloody stalemate with Ukraine having grabbed a chunk of Russian territory north of Ukraine. They invaded Russia, I don't know, about 6 months ago, and Russia has been unable to or unwilling to push them out. And then Russia slowly making bloody gains on the eastern front of in eastern Ukraine. And it's pretty stalemated right now. Biden raising the, you know, elimination or allowing the firing of U.S.-made weapons into Russian territory is really actually kind of frustrating, because there's no reason he could not have done this 2 years ago. And it's a sort of pattern that I think really sullied Biden's legacy on Ukraine, where instead of just like going all out and just offering all the aid and all the weapons and all the support and no restrictions, this thing may have been over 2 years ago had that been done from the beginning. But there's always this process for 6 months. No, we don't want to escalate. And then they finally get in and nothing to escalate. What's going to escalate? Like, Russia's already massacring Ukrainians by the thousands. So they lifted that. And, you know, Trump can come in 2 months and reinstitute that restriction, right? Like, it's not particularly useful at this point in any meaningful strategic sense. Now, tactically, it may help save some Ukrainian lives in the short term, but from a ending the war standpoint, too little, too late. And so now really it depends on what Trump is going to do. And we all know Trump doesn't know what he's going to do at any given moment, right? It's whoever talks to him the latest. There was a conversation with Trump and Ukrainian President Zelensky after Trump won, and people said that Zelensky was pleasantly surprised. No details, but he was pleasantly surprised. So maybe Trump is not going to come in hot to help Russia. And Russia has been on this weird thing where they've been insulting Donald Trump, right? So the day after Donald Trump won, state media ran pictures, Melania Trump's naked pictures, just for no reason, just to humiliate Melania Trump. And I don't know if Trump gives a damn about Melania. Like, do any of us really know? But it was such a blatant insult that maybe Trump might be feeling like, okay, you know, F Vladimir Putin, we're going to end this war once and for all, and we're going to lift all restrictions, and we're going to send more aid to Ukraine. And so maybe that's a thing that will happen. I wouldn't count on it, but I would be very pleasantly surprised, and I'd be very, very supportive if that's what happens.
Yeah. Well, you know, I would speculate that it was, you know, probably another way of letting him know, we run you. You work for us. You know, sometimes you got to put the employee in place.
It's like making RFK eat McDonald's on the plane, right? When RFK's entire shtick is about making America healthy again.
Right.
Have you or someone you know left the behavioral health field? Coming back has its benefits for you and Ohioans in need. We would love to have you back working at a community behavioral health center, and you could earn up to a $3,000 bonus. That's right, a $3,000 bonus. Visit mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback and restart your journey today. That's mha.ohio.gov/welcomeback.
It's finally here. Stop into Menards for amazing Black Friday deals. A 54-inch giant snow tube is only $9.99 each. Ladies slippers are just $6.99 a pair. And a men's heated jacket is $49.99. Ah, there's so many great Black Friday deals. I can't list them all. You'll have to hurry to Menards while supplies last to get these and many more Black Friday deals. Sale good Black Friday through December 1st. See Menards.com for details.
Save big money at Menards.
Lastly, what are we going to do about Twitter? People, there's going to be a planned mass exodus on January 20th. Many of us have already opened accounts on the Blue Sky Social.
Yeah, Blue Sky is the place.
Yeah. Are you planning on leaving?
Oh, I already left, and I set up shop at Blue Sky, and my follower numbers are dramatically increasing by the day.
Yeah.
Like 1,000 a day. And it's nice over there, Mark. And a lot of the big names have already moved over. And there's definitely a critical mass. And I noticed that even with my very small current number of followers on Blue Sky, I'm getting more engagement on Blue Sky than I was in Twitter, because Twitter's been throttling progressive voices anyway.
Yeah.
And for a while, it was like, are there the big names, are they over there? And they weren't. And now everybody's sort of moving. I hadn't heard about a January 20th third date, which is great, because now the problem Blue Sky's having is they're growing by 1 million people a day. They're up to 20 million as of 2 days ago. They have 20 employees, Mark, 20. So they're having some growing pains on the infrastructure side. And so I think people just need to be patient.
Yeah.
With as they do this, and Twitter had the same thing back in the early days too, right? So this is not unprecedented, but for a long time there's so many Twitter alternatives, and none of them were really sticking. And now I think the critical mass has been reached, and Blue Sky is the place. Now what's different? What's sort of the big question is if there's a big breaking news event. Like I still think Twitter, because a lot of government organizations are on Twitter, and a lot of major political figures are on Twitter. If they stay there, it means I can't delete my account, which I would love to delete my account. And I have 180,000 followers on Twitter, and I would kill to delete the account, but there's still work reasons to do so. If this wasn't my job, I would bug out of there. Close the account. I can't, but I'm certainly not really using it anymore. And so this past week I've spent all my time at Blue Sky. It feels comfortable. All the right people are there, and every day that critical mass keeps growing. So, so I didn't realize you're at Blue Sky. I gotta find you and follow you, or maybe I already do and forgot, but.
Same handles, @MakeItPlain, @Minister.
Cool, cool.
So you'll see me there.
We
aren't able to stream there yet. They don't have that technology, but I'm sure they'll get that in short order.
I think the money's going to flow, the VC money's going to flow into them to help make this a reality. So I definitely encourage everybody who's at Twitter to, if you can, just close that account, go over to Blue Sky. You know what? You don't have those blue check marks like at the bottom of every freaking post, just being total a-holes. Like it's actually quite nice.
Yeah.
And Andrew Tate lasted like 3 hours, like before he was banned from Blue Sky, right? So they're not putting up with the horrible people, which by itself is reason to go to Blue Sky.
Yeah. All right, folks, dailycoast.com, civicswithaq.com. Marcos, happy Thanksgiving to you and your family and to all of the listeners and all the viewers. Hope everyone has a blessed Thanksgiving.
And everybody, please take care of yourself. Please, I know politics are tough, but like it's okay to unplug. It's okay to like find a wellness practice, whether it's yoga or whether it's exercising or running or meditating, or like find a way to rejuvenate. And because it's going to be a long 4 years, and we need everybody healthy for the fights that come ahead. So like take care of yourself, please.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And folks, it's going to be all right. We're gonna be all right. We're gonna continue to stand for what's right. It's in moments like these that we find out who we really are. Unfortunately, some of us will have to learn the hard way.
Yeah.
But learn we will. And one thing is for certain, there will be no more Donald Trump runs for president. That is the end of that.
Yeah.
So that is a guarantee. All right, buddy. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Have a great Thanksgiving. Bye-bye.
Same to you, man.
Thanks for getting woke and listening to Make It Plain. As always, perform an act of kindness on behalf of an elder or young person. Write a letter. to a sister brother who just so happens to find her himself incarcerated. Offer libations to the ancestors upon whose sturdy shoulders we all now stand, and above all, give thanks to the God of your understanding by whatever name you call her and him. All God asks of us is that we give each other love. Thanks for giving MIP love. And please remember to subscribe and give us a 5-star rating. If all hearts and minds are clear, it has been made plain.